You're listening to Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where trainer and trainee discuss fitness, herbalism, and healthy habits for life. We're your hosts. I'm Paula Kirsch, owner of Botanically Curious and artisan herbalist.
And my name is Danielle Kreese, certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. Now, before we get started, if you could do us a brief favor and go to Apple Podcasts and just leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, let's start the show.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome back
to another episode of Bands and Botanicals, in case you didn't know that already. Yeah. Doing something a little different today. Mm-hmm. So we are recording on our phones, making a little video while we are doing our podcast. And I don't know about you, but I feel a little extra nervous about it.
Right.
Just makes me feel uncomfortable. It's like you got to make sure you're on at all points. Mm-hmm. How's your weekend?
Good. What did I do this weekend? Stayed inside. I think it was like a bajillion degrees.
Oh, yeah.
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 So.
Yeah, getting really hot.
And you just got back into town.
Yep. I just got back from Miami. My dad was retiring after 47 years, so we had a little celebration for him. And he was gifted a day on this catamaran yacht by one of his friends. And it was like the whole weekend it rained except for around us on that day on the water. And it was perfect. It was amazing to be back in the ocean. And but now it's back to reality. But all good things.
Yeah.
All good things. And so we're going to pull our card. And now you kind of get to see the process of everything. Mm-hmm. So what have we pulled for today, Paula?
Interestingly enough, we've pulled a coastal plant. So this actually grows near the ocean. So talking about the ocean. The oracle property is adventure. This is Sampire. So this is a really fantastic herb used for those that are into foraging with a lot of their food. That's something that's kind of growing in Europe a lot right now. And hopefully we'll see it in the United States here, but basically using what you have. And so if you're a coastal town, you're kind of incorporating this maybe into salads and other things like that. But the adventure property really comes from the fact that it grows near the ocean. And when we think about the ocean, you know, and anything nautical, there's this adventurous kind of tie to it of traveling or of shifting and changing and of the unknown. So I think that's really great. And I think it ties in really well to what we're going to be doing here in just a few weeks, which is our new kettlebell workout, which we haven't had a trainer come on with us to do our wellness events, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. So we have that little bit of a guest, but so it's like kind of a mini adventure for us as we continue to evolve with these events and stuff, but also hopefully an adventure for the people who join us in the sense that, you know, the kettlebell may not be something that you're that familiar with. I feel like they are certainly gaining in popularity, but it may not have been something that you utilized as much as say a dumbbell or a barbell. So, you know, it's a completely different medium. The weight balance is different and the center of gravity is different. The way you use momentum versus kind of like really controlled movements, which you mostly find with like dumbbells and barbells. So, you know, for those people who do sign up, it's kind of an adventure in itself in that you are going to be pushed out of your comfort zone and maybe what you're familiar with and comfortable with at the gym or within your own workouts. And you know, that's, I kind of think the best part of it is just always trying something new and seeing if it's something that you enjoy doing and seeing if it's a new way to move for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so since we're also videotaping and this is something, we have the cutest little thing. Where's she? My daughter's here today and then Danielle's daughter is here today.
So if you hear a bark, I apologize. She's only 9 weeks old. And she can only be so controlled. All right, go on.
Bye, Cypress. That's her name.
So in the kind of realm of the kettlebell and kind of working, some of the things that I'll be talking about today is herbs that have an affinity for the joints because joint mobility is really important for more fluid movement like that. So we're going to be talking about that. You know, it can be a little intimidating to do kettlebell workouts, especially in a group setting. And so the event that we have coming on is just something for all fitness levels. We've got Danielle, we've got Peter there, we've got all kinds of levels of weights. So it's going to be a really nice experience, even for beginners.
Yeah. And kind of what I'm going to be talking about following in suit with the event that is going to be happening. And the podcast episode that we had with Peter not too long ago is just calming kettlebell mistakes. And obviously you're going to learn this in depth and it's going to be hands-on when you come into the event. But if you're not local and you're not able to make it, then this video is kind of a nice thing to do as well, because I'll kind of be able to stand up and kind of show you actively what I'm talking about, as well as describing things to you. So I'm kind of excited. This is new territory for us. So adventure away.
Yeah. So common mistakes. Let's go ahead and kick it off.
Well, I would say that the first common mistake, and I would say this mistake actually can be found amongst any type of movement, and it's just the way in which you set yourself up. Like literally the very, very moment that you step up to do a movement. And especially with kettlebells, because with kettlebells, there is like a lot of momentum that's involved into it. And let's say you're doing it in a boot camp, or let's say you're doing it in a CrossFit, because you know that's commonly where you may find a kettlebell incorporated into the workout. You may be feeling like you have to like rush in order to get to that place or get to that exercise. So you're not setting yourself up. So especially with kettlebells, like I keep coming back to, since there is momentum, if you're unbalanced, if you don't set yourself up correctly, you're basically setting yourself up for injury or for potentially injuring someone else. I mean, especially when there is that swing involved, if you don't find stability and you don't find control in your movement, then what happens if you lose control of yourself or of that kettlebell? You know, you always want to keep yourself and others as safe as possible around you. So when you get to that place where you're going to start your movement, set up your stance. I always talk about this base of support, and that's basically, you know, there are some movements where you're going to go into a narrow foot positioning, but have your feet at least hip width apart. This base of support is not to make it any easier. It's just to give you that that base, that foundation that you need. It's just like when you are building a house or setting up a tripod, which Paula and I were just trying to do here. If you don't have a wide enough base of support, then it's just gonna fall over, right? The same goes for your body. So set yourself up, find your footing, make sure you're not staggered if that's not the position that you're going for, and then explode into the movement. So honestly, that first second is where you should start. So I'm gonna get up here for a second. Now, when you're doing it, you want to kind of stand about a foot away from the kettlebell just to initially start it so that you can get into that nice stance. Now, if you're familiar with a deadlift, you're familiar with a hip hinge row, you know that you have to hinge at the hips in order to have a really healthy and safe movement through the hamstrings and bring the power of the hips. So when you get started, you want to make sure you pull your shoulders down. They don't want to be nice and loose because you don't want them to shrug up, but I'll get more into that later. You know, we talked about locking out of the knees. So that's with the joints and like keeping them like healthy and safe. But there are more things that we could do for the joints from the inside that could also support the joints. So what can we do there?
Absolutely. So in promoting the event, talking to other people I know about the event, one of the things that everybody kind of reiterated was, well, you know, with the kettlebell or these fluid movements, I don't know how my joints are going to be that day. You know, maybe there's some swollenness or maybe just restriction for such a long time because you haven't been moving. And so a really great way to kind of ease into that, if you've ever started any kind of wellness venture or you're listening to us on the podcast and we tell you how you're not supposed to do a million things at once when you start off on your journey because it's not going to make you successful, one of the ways that you can ease in when you're starting to think about diet is incorporating certain herbs in your teas or salves or anything that you put on your body. Now, white willow bark is a fantastic one. This actually has an affinity for the joints. And if you go back to some of our other episodes, we've talked about energetics, which is the actions that they have and how they react within the body. And then the affinity of it is just pinpointing where exactly the actions are occurring within the body. And so willow bark is fantastic for joints. And so this even means the spine to a certain extent. And so osteoarthritis, if you have back pain, anything like that, incorporating this, doing any kind of tincture or salve or something where you can put it on your body. Now there's some controversy around drinking willow bark tea. I've done it before, it's fine. We're gonna try it out at our event as well. Something just for people to try. The reason that it's great for pain and helps with joints is that it's got some components and some things very similar to aspirin. Now, So a lot of the time we've talked about, you know, how herbs are a lot softer in the body and some of the things. Yes, willow bark is a lot softer because it's not the concentrated chemical version of something, but it lasts longer in your body. And so if you're used to popping Advil every day for just so that way you can get up and move around, you know, you're not going to want to incorporate willow bark in the same way because it stays in your system longer. And so you're actually going to eventually start overdosing yourself, and that affects your kidney and your liver. And so that's where the controversy comes in. But if you're only incorporating herbs when you need them, so I think we had a guest on the show that talked about supplements and herbs and how if you're not taking it all the time for the rest of your life, don't even bother. That's not really the case with herbalism, a lot of these things. You know, you think about if you know the affinity or you know some of the components of the herbs, or you've reached out to me online like a few people have, and you get some of that information, you realize that you can incorporate them. And it's kind of an ebb and flow depending on where you are and what your body needs. You really should be shifting your herbs just like you shift your seasonal foods or should be. So, you know, it's got tannins and flavonoids, so that's going to make it more of like a bitter, astringent taste. And so it's not necessarily always the best for teas, but you can incorporate it. You know, one of the things that I do is I'll do rosemary. And for the event, we're going to be talking about blending, which is really formulating how to do that properly. And so willow bark is fantastic with rosemary because rosemary is more circulatory. So when you've got the joint affinity from the willow bark, you've got the circulatory from the rosemary, which is making sure the blood's really moving through your body well. That's making sure if you have inflammation or any of these things within your joints, that it's starting to kind of push that through. And then if you are more of a hot, dry person, but you still have some of that, you can add rose and violet or something that's a little bit softer that also helps with the flavor a little bit more. And then you have a nice whole health tea that you'll drink maybe once a month, if that, when you need it, just to kind of ease into the body. And so that's really great. And I think willow bark's great because it has a lot of like superstitious things around it where that whole saying like knock on wood. Well, originally it was actually knocking on a willow bark tree to ward off evil. And so that's kind of gone through and, you know, all of these really fun superstitious things. So I think it's kind of a neat old folksy anything. Anytime I think of like a big, you know, willow tree, it's, yeah.
I love that. Oh my God. Willow trees are my favorite trees.
Yeah.
Actually.
I think they're gorgeous.
Yeah. Jeff and I said our vows to each other under a willow tree.
Aww.
In Canada. Yeah. So it holds a special place. So that's awesome. So some of these herbs that you're talking about today, and maybe they're not as accessible or I'm not really sure, but is there anything that you'll be having at the event on Saturday?
Right. So we'll have some willow bark.
Nice.
Now, for those that
or Sunday when we do it on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah.
For those that are able to harvest, it's usually you'll find these trees near water. That's where they usually thrive. You'll take a knife and you'll just cut into the bark until you get to more of the young green bark, and you'll start slowly peeling that back. And then once you harvest a little bit, because you don't want to do a lot of it, you'll cut
honorable harvest, guys.
Right.
Honorable
you'll cut that harvest into like inch, 2 inch thick strips, so that way you can dry it properly and it won't hold moisture. The other thing I like about this is that it does have a little bit of that balance between dry and moist. And so it's not, even though it's astringent, it's not going to dry you out like dandelion would. So
nice. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the not taking too much, because we really need to, I think that's an important component to like herbalism, right? And to honoring the plant, and to, if you are going to go out and forage things on your own, is just always keeping that in mind. Only take as much as you need. And I was even doing honorable harvest as much as you need. I was doing was it last summer? It was during COVID. I was supposed to go to Cave Junction for this amazing woman's kind of retreat. And it was kind of bringing you back to yourself and celebrating the divine feminine. And I guess it was just woman X. So anyone identifying as well. And it also really was going to teach you about kind of the old ways of being and how we relied so much on this earth and the way to symbiotically live with this earth. And they talked about even, you know, like asking of the plant if it's okay to take of it. And for some people that may seem ridiculous, but I mean, this is a living thing that you are taking from, and you would ask anything else or anyone else if you could have some of what they have created.
Or you should. I think it's a good practice that we've lost in society, or that, you know, it's one of those things where it doesn't matter. Consent is consent, right? I
mean, yeah.
Just, you might as well, in the respect of like humanity and being humane, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Ask.
And I feel like throughout time, you know, it was a, it wasn't just a taking, you know, it was a give and a take. So even if it was just like offering a thank you to the plant, I mean, I've done that before. I just got some thyme and some rosemary for a dinner tonight from our garden. And I gave my thanks to the plant for just that little snip that I took. So
yeah. And it's really, you know, if you want to get more scientific about it, there's been plenty of research that shows talking to plants, singing to plants, playing positive music,
playing
to
Beyonce,
plants, it helps the plant flourish, you know, and there's so much more study. We've talked about Monica Gigliano and some of her research and her books that she has out, which I highly recommend, just like Thus Spoke the Plant and some of those things, where living organisms react to their environment. So maybe it's not the same way a human would react to it, but there is definitely a difference.
Oh man. I mean, Jeff and I, and then we'll go back to what we were talking about, but Jeff and I read this book together called The Hidden Life of Trees. And it was this incredible, I mean, like mind-blowing book about the communication that trees have within each other and the family units trees have within each other. And there's also the example of my octopus teacher. I don't know if you've seen that documentary.
I love that,
And it's just this idea. To me, it's the idea that just because the communication isn't the same as what we do with each other as Homo sapiens or humans, but there is still communication happening within the natural world all around us. And it's, you know, it's kind of keeping that in mind, and it's both very real and also very magical. And I think that's why throughout history, or most of history, people have felt that connection and nurtured that connection. And I think that a lot of people are trying to get back to that. And I hope that this little reminder kind of brings you that little extra connection.
Absolutely.
So when I talk about like setting yourself up with a kettlebell and the common mistakes that could be made, at least for this particular podcast today, I'm going to largely be talking about the kettlebell swing, mostly because that's what a lot of people identify with when using the kettlebell. It's kind of the unique movement you could do with the kettlebell. I mean, of course, you could do bicep curls, you could do rows, you could do squats. But that kettlebell swing, I think, is very unique to that particular modality. So I kind of talked about setting yourself up, finding your stance, you know, making sure you have a softness in your knees and sending your hips back. So going into sending your hips back, the muscle that you're kind of deriving power from is the back of the leg. So this is very much a posterior chain kind of movement here. You do definitely have to brace your core 100,000%. So it's not, you know, the whole body is connected, right? The whole body is moving, but a lot of the power is coming from the posterior chain, from the back of the body, from the hamstrings, from the hips, from the glutes. So when you're setting yourself up, there's kind of, I want you to kind of think about setting up a football hike. I think that's a hike, hike. I think that's what it's called. You watch those, I don't know what they are. You watch those football players. I was trying to think of the position. You watch those football players really bend into it and send those hips back behind them. And that's kind of what you want to think about. This is a relatively aggressive movement, comparatively speaking, to when we talk about a lot of control in a squat or in a deadlift, especially, you know, deadlifts are kind of meant to be like relatively slow and mindful, but you could get a little aggressive. You want to harness your power in this. This is what I always tell people, is that this is that one time where you want to use that momentum to your advantage. It's not just like muscling it up, which kind of goes into my next point of this not necessarily being about the arms. I mean, yes, your arms are involved, but sometimes your arms are just the anchor point. So you will get some range of motion work. You will get some mobility work because you do have that swing, but you're not gonna, you know, it's not necessarily for like the deep strength or the big, big strength that you're looking for. So you're getting the power from the hips. The arms should be more of your anchor, so you're not dropping in and slowly moving up. In that case, you may as well be doing a front raise, you know, a type of shoulder workout or shoulder movement where it's, you know, really focused in, but you want to use that power and you want the arms to be the anchor. Never lock out, never lock out those elbows, never lock out those knees. You also don't want, you know, with that being said, you don't want to move too slow. It's called a swing for a reason. And I know that may sound obvious to people, but I think it's a good thing to reiterate because, again, because we're so used to telling people, don't, you know, you're not like throwing the weight up. If you're doing that, then it's probably too heavy. For example, if you're doing a bicep curl and you're just trying to use momentum in order to curl it up, that's not really what you're going for in that particular move. But this is a swing. Right. So you want to treat it as such. You want to kind of flow with it. I really love a kettlebell swing because the whole body is coordinated together. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is one of the best things about it. You also don't want to necessarily take it too high. I mean, just bringing it up to just about chest level or just under the chest is a really great place to be. There have been studies that people have done to see if like bringing it really high has a lot of added benefit, at least in regards to what we were talking about in this moment. That's not necessarily what you're going for. There are other types of swings that you could bring it up and overhead and kind of tackle it in a different way, but we're just going for that most kind of the basic kettlebell swing. And then the last thing I'll talk about before I send it back off to Paula, and then we'll come back around into this, is to not overly extend your back. So this happens a lot with the deadlift as well, is that when we come out of it, we want to extend backwards. Mm. Now, you're not necessarily completely upright per se. I mean, there may be a little bit of movement back, but there's a difference between moving back with a neutral spine versus arching that lower back and kind of adding a lot of strain and tension to the lower back. So that's what you want to look out for. So when we first started this conversation, I told you there's a slight tuck of your hips. So that's kind of what you want to maintain even on the way up because you want to find that neutral spine.
Right, and you almost can't overextend if you're engaging your muscles.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, thank you so much for bringing that up. If you are properly drawing in navel to spine and there is a bracing that's involved within the core, then it will. It that's what it's there for. That's why we tell you when you bring navel to spine, it's not just for the engagement of your abs, but also for the protection of your entire back mm-hmm. and that entire trunk complex, I guess you could say. So yeah, 100%. Thank you.
So getting back into herbs that have an affinity for the joints, because you know, with what Danielle was just mentioning, throwing the weight up way above your shoulders. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of rotator cuff injuries that happen when people are working with kettlebells for a long time. And so that's why joints and joint mobility is really important. Also lubricating the joints. And so on the podcast before, I've talked about marshmallow root. I'm a huge fan of marshmallow root just because it can be thrown into all kinds of things. And whether you do a cold infusion or a hot infusion, you're getting different components out of it, which is really fantastic. But the one that I'm going to be talking about today is very similar. It's comfrey. So comfrey, usually using the root, it's also been called a bruised wart or a knit bone or things like that. But comfrey is the easiest one. I think we had a guest on the show that was talking about comfrey. It's fantastic fertilizer for a garden. You can remulch it back in. It's high in potassium, so it's great. They call it, you can Google online, like comfrey tea. And it's going to be most likely talking about fertilizer for your garden. So it's not necessarily something you drink. So fantastic for sprains, swelling, bruising, all of those things that happen, whether you're doing kettlebells or some other kind of workout, which is really great. But it's got that mucilaginous quality that you would get from like marshmallow root. So it's going to do a little bit of that lubricating that happens. When you're harvesting it, you know, you might see this. It's just got kind of almost like a tongued leaf on it. And there's a bunch of them. It's pointed. And so it's about 2 inches off the ground. You would kind of harvest that and it would be before bloom. Same with the root. You would kind of pull that out before really it blooms. So it would be sometime in the spring. And it's got cooling and moistening aspects to it. So when you've got hot, dry, inflamed areas, if you're a person that has affinities for those types of things where you know that maybe you're a little bit older, there's not as much moisture, or maybe you have that grinding, clicking thing. This is a fantastic one, mostly to use topically. So these are ones we don't talk a lot. You know, I say tea is a really great way to just get it in for your diet, but you can do infused oils really easily as well. The ratio is really, really simple. And so some of the time you can even get lucky enough to just get some dried herb, put it in a jar. And as long as you cover the whole entire thing with oil and you shake it once or twice a day for up to 2 weeks, and then you strain out the herbs after 2 weeks, you have yourself an infused oil. So it's a little easier to incorporate. I personally use like apricot oil as soon as I get out of the shower and I put it all over my body. And sometimes they're infused with different herbs, which helps.
We did an oil. Was it with the
calamus? It was calamus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it, I mean, I use it still on my leg and it was really simple to do. And we have a video up with it too. So if you
I think we put that on.
Yeah, I believe we have a video up. So if you want that reference on that oil infusion, mm-hmm. then that could be a good one to reference as well.
Yeah. And this is a really great example. Like calamus has so many different areas in which it could help. Like willow bark. Yes, it's anti-inflammatory, but it helps with a bunch of different things. Same with comfrey. So when I talk about an herb that's just specific for, say, joints for right now, or it's anti-inflammatory, that doesn't mean that it's the only thing it does. It just means that it's pertinent to the topic that we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I mentioned, you don't use an herb forever. You just use it while you need it. And then, you know, you're not using it. So this is another one where, you know, as a poultice, which is just the dried herb, you get it really wet, you put it on something and then you hold it onto your skin. Or a salve is really great. Use it when you need it. But it's not something you want to incorporate every day.
All right. So continuing on, I mean, this sounds like it's a lot to think about. And I guess it is a lot to think about with kettlebell swings. And especially when you're trying to coordinate the entire body to work as one,
right.
Rather than, you know, a lot of people are comfortable on a machine because they feel really supported. But really, you're not utilizing the entire body, and you're kind of, to me, I don't particularly love machines unless they're needed, because
right.
I feel like it takes away from the engagement you have to be a part of. So especially with a kettlebell swing, you know, there is quite a lot to think of. But with that being said, before I continue, just practice. That's all you need to do. Come to this event,
mm-hmm.
listen to this podcast, look at videos. I mean, if you just practice consistency, that mindfulness starts to become second nature. I mean, Paula
right.
could tell you that sometimes she'll be doing a move, or I'll have other clients who are doing a move, and they'll see my eye go to some
right.
part of their body, or
and I'm like, oh,
yeah. Or they'll see me like thinking something, and it's like they've gotten so consistent with it now and been so mindful for themselves that they automatically know what I'm talking about. And I've even seen, without me even doing it, I've seen you start to make adjustments to your body and kind of know
right.
when something feels off. So just practice. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah.
Nothing that seems too scary or overwhelming. But something that can happen is disconnected lat syndrome. And so that's
mm-hmm.
when, and this could happen, excuse me, I'm sorry, Bella. This could happen sometimes, especially if you do try to go too high, is that you tend to shrug up with your shoulders. So
mm-hmm.
those shoulders start traveling to your ears, you lose your neck a little bit. And not only will you start to then compensate a lot or really overtrain and really strain the traps on the top of the shoulders, but you could also lead to impingement. So I loved that you talked about that shoulder health and that last herb that you talked about, because it's exactly what I was going to go into. And anyone who's had shoulder impingement knows that that's not particularly comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are going into that swing, you only need to go to up to about chest high if that's accessible to you there. And you want to think about packing the shoulders down. So pulling the lats down and away from the ears. And you could still bring the arms up without the shoulders following and without you starting to get into parts of muscles in the neck and muscles in the traps that you're not even trying to engage. And they'll start to overtake. So you don't want to fall into that pattern, because once you do, it's really hard to break.
Especially if you work at a desk, so then you get back and you're just like this.
Oh, yeah.
The whole time. And
yeah.
then you look like some creepy character.
Yeah, I always tell people you don't want to Uncle Fester yourself. So
right.
for anyone who's seen Adam's Family, you don't want to lose your neck. You know, think about that movie or whatever. It's weird. It's not a good look. All right. So also, you don't want to stop too short at the bottom. So people often do that where it's almost like they're going into a squat and the weight just comes almost directly underneath their hips rather than moving behind their hips. So remember when I was talking about that hiking position that you get if you're throwing the football to a quarterback, that's what you want to think of. So the remedy to stopping too short, because when you stop too short also, think about if you're trying to make a rubber band go far. right? If you just pull the rubber band a little bit, it's not going to have much power behind it. It's not going to have much forward momentum. But if you pull the rubber band back, it's going to move a lot forward, farther, and it's going to have a lot more power behind that little spring. So that's the same thing with your hips. Move those hips back more. You have greater range of motion to really thrust under. And I'm gonna say you thrust those hips. You do. That may, for those who aren't watching, that may be a good visual. And you're gonna have a lot more power behind the swing, and you're not gonna sell yourself short or potentially injure yourself by stopping too early, rather. You know, this is about not how high you go with the bell, but about that forward power you have with the bell, the power of your hamstrings and your hips. And the last thing that I wanted to say, and this goes with any movement, but definitely the kettlebell, when you have that different weight distribution, since the weight is at the bottom of the bell rather than being, you know, evenly on one side and the other, is to not let that last rep be the one that leads to injury. So I see it a lot with jump movements and with explosive movements, and I see it a lot with kettlebells, is that I get it, you're fatigued, you're waiting to get to that last second of that interval or that last rep, and you're really pushing your body. And so you get there, and all of that mindfulness, all of that engagement that you held on to through the movement completely goes out the window, and you round the shoulders, the core almost collapses into itself. You lose like that proud positioning of your chest, and you're doing, you know, you are setting yourself up for disaster, essentially. I mean, why be mindful throughout the entire movement for you to not finish it off that way? If you were doing a report for work or a report for school, that last paragraph, that conclusion would not just be like, and the end, that.
Get this shit done.
And then you have that teacher writing at the end, like, great work, but that last paragraph could have been a bit stronger. It's kind of that same concept. You don't want to stop before the finish line. You don't want to, you know, not give your best at the very end. And you don't want to set yourself up for injury. I mean, it sucks if that last rep is the one that just takes you out or strains your back or blows your back or your knee or whatever the case is. So think about dropping the kettlebell or dropping the weight or even dropping the box that you're picking up in your house with intention. Think about still having your back flat. Think about your chest being proud and dropping through the legs. You are not just bending from your back in order to set it onto the ground. So I think that kind of brings us to the end of it. That was a lot. And if you're not watching, you know, it's definitely a lot to listen to.
Right.
I know with the exercise portion of this, I mean, especially if you're not completely used to using the kettlebell. So
yeah, I think it's just a really great reminder that no matter what workout you're doing, if you are looking for more plant-based, if you're already a vegan, vegetarian, if you want to get away from pharmaceuticals because you've struggled with addiction before, but you want to find something to manage your pain, you know, herbs are a really great way to incorporate, even if you're doing these workouts that aren't yin yoga or walking, you know, it's not like you have to do softer movements to start incorporating herbs, you know, these hard, rough movements. A kettlebell workout is fantastic for really any kind of athlete, especially if you're doing things like even jiu-jitsu. You know, if you're on the mat, on your back, you're being, somebody's on top of you and you have to flip them off of you, your hip health and strength is really, really pertinent for that, to be able to kind of push them off of you with your hips. And so it doesn't matter, you know, what type of athlete you are or where you are in your fitness levels, you know, incorporating these things, incorporating these herbs is just going to help your whole health.
Yep. And that's all we're here to do is just to show you how you can support yourself, kind of take a little bit more control for yourself and your health and your body. And inevitably, hopefully that kind of influences your life and your mind and just the way you feel about everything.
Right.
And with that, peace and love. I'm glad the pup got a little bit quieter at some point this
she's
podcast.
Asleep now.
Yeah, now she's asleep, of course, as we're ending this. Right. And I'm going to have to wake her up to go to the bathroom. So with that, again, peace and love. Bye. Yes.
Ideas or topics discussed during this podcast
should not be a replacement for any type of medical advice. Although Danielle is a certified trainer and I have a knowledge of herbal medicine, any decision to incorporate an exercise or herbal remedy is always your own.